for listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Few people would find terminal illness something to laugh about, but in her debut novel, The Book of Dahlia, Alisa Albert has approached the matter with a balance of wit and dark humor, and some pathos as well. Her 29-year-old protagonist, Dahlia Finger, an admitted underachiever, has come to terms with her unfulfilled life and broken Jewish family after being diagnosed with an inoperable level 4 tumor in the left temporal lobe of her brain. The book is published by Free Press, and it is my great pleasure to welcome Alisa Albert to the show today. Hello.
Hi.
And this is your second book, we should point out. The first was a very well-received short story collection, How This Night Is Different. Did this begin as a short story, or did you know you were going to write a novel from the start?
I hoped I would write a novel. I was attempting to write a novel.
Your agent said, I think it's time for you to write a novel.
Yes, indeed. I was sort of circling around this idea and hoping it would evolve into a novel. So I was gratified when that seemed to start happening.
Do people assume that you've been terminally ill?
At a reading in Seattle, there was a funny moment when a woman showed up, a very nice older lady with her knitting, and she introduced herself to me and she said, I'm here to support you because I am a survivor of cancer as well, and it's great that you survived a brain tumor, and you know, we need to support each other. And I didn't really know what to say. I just said, thank you.
Well, that it is a problem for writers of fiction, especially for first novelists, because it's always assumed that the first novel is semi-autobiographical at least.
Right.
But is Dahlia like you on any levels?
Dahlia is certainly a spun-out, highly exaggerated sort of corner of a potential that I might have.
But on your worst days.
Right, right. A potential that I think we all have on our worst days. So I could definitely empathize with her, even though I am not her.
And I guess now with the internet, it's a lot easier to research things like glioblastoma multiforme. Did I say it right?
Multiforme, I think. I did have personal experience with brain cancer, which made it sort of easier for me to feel like I had the right to write about it. My older brother died of a brain tumor when he was 29.
Is this a common type of brain tumor?
No. I mean, in the world of brain tumors, I don't know how common it is. I was sort of more clued into the emotional realities of losing him and not so much the medical realities. So I did sort of the bare minimum of medical research then and now. The sort of psychological journey is what I was more interested in.
And you give us this rather unfulfilled young woman, very smart, but
right.
The female equivalent of a slacker.
Exactly, exactly. And we see those male characters all over fiction and love them. I do. So I don't see why it's not possible to place a female slacker, ne'er-do-well, screw-up in those ranks.
And you knew it was going to be satirical from the start?
No, I wasn't sure what it was going to be. I knew I wanted her to be sort of reactive, and I think reactive people lend themselves to a certain kind of comedy.
In fact, but because it is a satirical novel on some levels, that would automatically lead to a cast of fairly unpleasant characters.
Right, right.
Once you came up with a character, I'm sure you thought, well, what can I do to find a flaw in this person?
Sure. It's most interesting as a writer to look at flaws in character. The good stuff doesn't necessarily need examining as much, I don't think.
Well, Dahlia has her faults, but her mother and brother are real pains.
Sure, although I don't know how they would come off in their own books from their own perspectives.
Dahlia doesn't seem to have any strong role models, male or female.
No, she's sort of lost.
And Bruce, her father, is the only character from whom she reserves the full force of her cynicism and dissatisfaction. Is that because he indulges her in ways that the other characters don't?
Yeah, I think he's just the only gentle, sort of loving, kind soul she has around her. Everybody else sort of devastates her in different ways, and he's the one who is just placid and there and loving, and that's all he has to offer.
Well, he pays her rent in New York and then buys her a lovely cottage in Venice, California.
And he pays her rent and buys her a house, yes.
Her brother is a successful, respected rabbi, someone who tends his flock but is unresponsive and cold to his own sister. We've seen that all too often, haven't we?
Yes, yes. I love that idea. They're yin-yang, Dahlia and Danny, her brother. She's somebody who's so open on the inside. So, I mean, she's just a walking open wound, really. And, you know, on the outside, she's completely unproductive, screwed up. He's exactly the opposite. He has everything in the world to give to the world at large and is completely closed down and cold to those closest.
Dahlia is named after the kibbutz on which she was conceived. Was there really a kibbutz Dahlia?
There is really a kibbutz Dahlia. It's D-A-L-I-A, however.
Mm-hmm. So you change the spelling a little bit. But is that significant? If an Israeli who knows about kibbutz Dahlia reads this book, will they read things into it that somebody who didn't grow up in that culture might not know?
I wonder. I hope what's in the book, what's portrayed about the kibbutz is enough to sort of evoke it properly. But I'd be curious to know if that lends a new angle.
Well, Dahlia grows up with an ambivalent sense of her Jewish heritage. It's distant but curious.
Yes, like many, many American Jews, you know, in my age group, I find it's there and it's important, quote unquote, but we're not necessarily sure how, why.
She, as I said, she's a slacker. She smokes marijuana before she needs it to manage her illness.
True.
Spends her day stoned in front of the TV watching the same movies repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause she doesn't have to do anything else?
I think she's numb. I think she is at a loss. She is a sort of destroyed human being before she gets sick. And so what happens then? If life is already, you know, meaningless and horrible, and then something really devastating happens, what are the implications of that?
My guest is Elisa Albert, whose latest book is her first novel, The Book of Dahlia, published by Free Press. You teach creative writing at Columbia. I suspect that you've had a fair number of students who remind you of Dahlia.
Oh, well, not quite so bad. Usually they're pretty bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Although her brother's a rabbi, Dahlia chooses to consult a book called It's Up to You, Your Cancer To-Do List. Are there really self-help books of this sort? I mean, this is a book that's almost insulting
right
to its readers.
There are so many. And I had at first kind of a good time researching them and slowly just became horrified by the feel-good sort of shallow nature of what I was seeing. I exaggerated a few different books. It's a sort of a conglomeration. But yeah, the tone of many seems to be that infuriatingly optimistic.
Well, if there are so many of them out there, obviously they have a market.
Sure.
People feel a need for this.
Sure, sure.
Dahlia is skeptical about both conventional medicine and non-conventional treatments for her illness.
Dahlia, again, is somebody who is a wrecked human being before this happens. So there are no tools at her disposal for dealing positively or productively.
Now, you chose to write this in the omniscient third person rather than in Dahlia's first person. Was that something that you had to consider?
I tried it in the first person at the beginning, and it was too close. She's just too unpleasant and too, you know, negative. So I found it harder to empathize with her when I was actually trying to be in her voice. I felt like with this omniscient, there was a way of sort of grabbing the reader and saying, all right, I'm testing your empathy here. You know, we're going to look at this together and see how it makes us feel.
Because that is a really tricky thing, creating a likable heroine who also is dislikable on
Absolutely.
So many levels.
Well, I think if we're not able to empathize with unlikable people, what good is empathy in the first place?
So now that you have written your first novel and it's already getting wonderful reviews, are you going to go back to short stories? Are you going to go back, do both?
I hope I'll do both. I'm sort of working on a short story right now, trying to use it as kind of a palate cleanser before I hazard a leap into a new novel. And it's like different muscle groups. It's using just a different way of thinking. So I like going back and forth. I think it's good to exercise that way.
Well, classic short stories are very compressed. Novels allow you to be a lot more digressive.
Right. They're loose, baggy monsters, right?
But then the big problem for many short story writers is keeping their novels from becoming too loose and too baggy.
Right, right. Something to be aware of, certainly.
And is this something that you had to deal with? I just read recently that Tobias Wolff says his favorite part of writing is rewriting, to the point where he changes characters' names, he changes their backgrounds, he does everything. I would have thought that would be the most tedious thing to do.
I think it just depends what you are bringing to the table in terms of your attitude and your approach to the work. I would never, ever argue with Tobias Wolff on the subject of writing. It's interesting. I think rewriting is hugely important, and when we sort of shy away from it, it might be because of our egos.
Just talking with an actress about reading reviews, and most actors who tell you they don't like to read reviews because it affects their performances. But I suspect that writers read every review that comes their way, positive and negative.
Yes, we do.
What happens when you read something that is negative?
I burn some sage and do a little dance around my house to try to forget about it. No, it's. I heard what you were saying earlier to the actress, and I agree with her completely.
Anika Noni Rose.
Yes. The good ones will mess with your head, and the bad ones will mess with your head as well. They both just, they have different ways of messing with you.
Do you just, do the funny things just come, or are they part of the rewrites?
Usually that's sort of where I go immediately. I have to hold myself back sometimes and try to not be, you know, a comedian all the time. It's hard to deal with difficult, painful things without turning immediately to humor for me.
And that was the big surprise for pretty much every review said the same thing that I started off with. You wouldn't expect a book about terminal cancer to also be funny, but
right.
The book is very funny.
Right. I hope the pathos and, you know, the sadness and the humor are sort of indistinguishable at some point.
Well, it ends in the... I'm not going to give away the ending.
Oh, you can. You can. It was always the ending. There's never any question.
You knew that from the start?
Yes.
She wasn't going to have some kind of miracle cure?
Absolutely not.
Alyssa Albert's first novel, but obviously not her last, is called The Book of Dahlia. It is published by Free Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.